The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And we have breaking news here on the program from Radio Row. That is Brian Harsin. He could end up being the last person standing. He's an SEC football coach. He is still here. He dropped by here about an hour ago. I admire him. He is still here. First time around, hasn't met a lot of people. And there is some precedent for that. Other coaches, Heupel and others this week, did a nice job of schmoozing the media. Steve Spurrier, his first media days, played golf with the media. Nobody has done that since. Jim Cavallo joining us. So great to have you back from Influencer. And we are now, 22 days since NIL launched. And we're curious, since you live here, glad you could drop by and tell us how it's going.
You know, I think it's going really well, Paul. I think what's interesting is, you know, we're in
the first few weeks of a multi-decade marathon. And I think a lot of people want a lot of answers, even down to which athletes are doing the best, which schools are doing the best. But really, we just have a set of qualitative data. We've got some good anecdotes and stories of athletes embracing this. And, you know, I think SEC athletes are doing really well because they're in a lot of states that had bills. So those schools were preparing and getting ahead of this. And it's one of those things, though, student athletes really don't know where to start. And so we're trying to help them the best we can.
And we've seen a lot of the first day, all this was pre-planned, pre-packaged. We heard what Saban said Tuesday about Bryce Young. And I want to ask you about that because it sent a message that recruits, I'm sure, well, went gaga over, but others have not. What you're trying to help young people get some benefit. But when you hear a story like one player who has not started yet could be making more than $1 million, what is your reaction?
That's the quarterback at the University of Alabama. That's my reaction. I mean, we're talking about 500,000 student athletes, and 499,900 are probably going to make four figures at best because this is available to them. But there's going to be 100 that are going to do really, really well. There's probably going to be another 900 that are going to make five figures, maybe you know, somewhere between five and six figures. But the real story here with athletes is they're learning that performance plays a part in this, and then branding initiative plays a part in this. And so the better you perform, you create more opportunity for yourself, but then you've got to do a good job of telling your story on social media, going out there and actually making money with your NIL. This is a business. So you get out what you put in this is just like playing time. This is just like being the leading scorer. This is just like anything else that's hard or extraordinary. It takes initiative. And student athletes are going to learn that when they see some peers do really well with this, and they might not. And it'll motivate them to take this more seriously.
Jim, let's take a composite. You see a lot. I don't want to violate anyone's confidence or your relationship, but let's just look at one of these average deals. And what happens? And what does that person have to do? And then how is it measured so the deal continues?
Yeah. So first of all, just for, you know, bigger picture thought, we've had more than 1,000 athletes report transactions thus far through their influencer app. And, you know, that is something that I find interesting. It's also more than 1,000 unique athletes have reported actually more than 2,000 transactions. So the average athlete's doing more than one transaction, but the average transaction's less than $100. Less than $100, right? So you're talking about a lot of in-kind transactions, right? A free meal, a free t-shirt, something like that they still have to report because there's a value to it. And they weren't allowed to accept that before NIL became a thing. Now they can, but they have to report it. And so whether it's an athlete getting hit up through a direct message on their social media from a company in their area saying, hey, we would like you to promote our restaurant. If you post something while you're in on your social media, we'll give you a gift card for $100. They go in there, they're able to get a free meal or get a gift card. They post an Instagram story of themselves in there, they tag the restaurant, and that's the transaction they have to report. And that's going to be a common transaction. At the same time, there are athletes who are gaming this. They're creating a logo, putting it on a t-shirt, selling it on an online e-commerce store, tagging that in their social media. They're reporting those transactions as they come in. They're making money that way. But then they're saying, hey, when I do cameos, I'm going to wear that same t-shirt in my cameo videos to activate the logo. And they're starting a podcast where they have access that even you in the media position you're in don't have. They're a player. They're an athlete. They can do a really cool podcast and get access and share stories. And I think you see a lot of athletes do that. So those are the ones gaming it, but that's what it looks like.
On the podcast front, because my dog, this is an announcement. My dog is starting a podcast beginning tomorrow. I listen to podcasts. You do. But at some point, How does that work?
It's about saturation.
There's a couple that are multi-million dollar podcasts, but yeah, if the offensive lineman at Arkansas starts a podcast, yeah, there's Arkansas fans that might sample it, but how do you measure it?
I think $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 to that lineman is actually a significant amount of money. Number okay. one, it's a significant spark to something outside of sports for his career. And once again, his level of access. I mean, JJ Redick has a great podcast. It's called The Old Man and the Three. And this guy goes around as he travels playing NBA games in the 16th or whatever veteran season he's in the NBA. And he gets really high quality interviews with a Zion Williamson for 2 hours that a normal media member is not going to get because JJ is still playing. And I think you're going to see athletes do that. There's a fan base to tap into. Blue Wire Podcast is a partner of ours, and they can help an athlete from soup to nuts, literally name the podcast, get it on Spotify and Apple, and then from there sell advertising for it. So I think you're going to see athletes take advantage of things like that, but it's not the multi-million dollar podcast opportunity.
Jim, we had the liftoff, and it's kind of like watching Branson or Bezos go up in space. I mean, everyone's going crazy. I've been tied up. Is Bezos back? I mean, I don't even know. So my point being, I remember the first couple of days of this, you know, Bo Nix, the Cavender twins. Now we have Bryce Young. But what happens next? Because camp starts in a week. Season starts in 6 weeks. What do you see then?
I think that this is going to evolve. I think that, once again, you're going to see athletes who perform well this fall create an opportunity for themselves to take initiative on actually starting an NIL business. And that's going to require them to either get an agent, which many are going to not be in a position to do that because they don't bring in enough money to want to give up $10,000, $20,000 to an agent. So they're going to have to take initiative. Their parents are going to have to help out. They're going to use our platform. That's why we created this, is the majority of the athletes can't afford an agent, don't need to get an agent. We want to help them report their transactions, find opportunities, and do it without having to share the revenue with anyone. But athletic performance is going to create opportunity, and from there, they've got to take initiative. And it's like everything else. You get out what you put in. I want to make one more point. Saban implied that Bryce is moving towards seven figures, and that was it. We didn't talk about specific deals, what types of things he's gonna do, right? He's talking about the opportunity that's already come to him, and he was saying it in a pretty high level manner. I think we're gonna see this fall what tangibly comes out of that opportunity for Bryce.
Just out of curiosity, and I'm not dead, I mean, he did say near, that there's a difference between seven figures and near seven figures. Seven figures is a pretty high standard, no matter who you are, where you are, what you're doing. Does somebody know how much money Bryce Young is making right now?
Yeah, I mean, Alabama compliance knows.
So they should, they would have a list. They would be able to track everything he's making or everything he's reporting.
Part of the Alabama state law. Right. Is that every transaction must be reported to the compliance department of the institution. So there's a mechanism every institution has. Most of them do use influencer, but Alabama actually uses a different mechanism, but Bryce has to report that.
Okay. Final question on this. In terms of once the season starts, I know you're guessing because we haven't ever been down this road before, but are we going to see waves with a – a big play, an upset? Is that going to?
I'm going to go back to basketball because it's more recent. When Jalen Suggs hits the shot to beat UCLA and stands up on the scorer's table in front of the stands, he's able to right away create an NFT of that moment and sell it to fans who love him.
Got it.
And that's a big opportunity that comes and goes very fast. And we know tons of athletes at college who live that out, never became much at the pro level or whatever else. What could they have done with what they did at their university? That's what we're going to see.
Thanks so much. It's great staying in touch with you. We will talk very soon.
Looking forward to it,
Jim
Paul. Thanks for having me.
I'm Influencer. We are going to take a break, come back with two pretty familiar names on the SEC Network, McElroy and Kubik. They have a radio show now.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we welcome you back, and the latest and the hottest radio duo in America joins us now, Cole Kublik and Greg McElroy, who now hosts a program on WJOX in Birmingham. And I had the honor of being on your show a couple of times already, and we'll talk about the big issues, but you guys are off to a great start.
Well, you are our first guest, so we set the bar remarkably high. You missed the first segment in which Cole wanted to dive deep into the Bill O'Brien hire as our first segment on the air together. But you were the second segment, so I figured, why not, right? I mean, it seems like what more appropriate way to introduce a radio show by getting into Bill O'Brien's hiring and then bringing on Paul Feinbaum.
And just for those of you who don't listen to Birmingham radio, I had already been grandfathered in. I had done the previous show and then the previous show before that. So there's no guarantee that you guys really want me on the show, but I had a sponsor.
Correct.
Are you kidding? You don't think Greg McElroy could have had anyone he wants pushed off the show?
Yeah.
Throws that weight around a little bit? Trust me.
You remind me of past. Yeah, I think he probably could have.
I don't know. I've had sponsors on your show, by the way, and that we were able to get out of that one. Because you started asking me politically incentivized questions.
Little known story for those of you at home. Back, was it 12?
2011 or 12, around
one
there.
Of those years.
Yeah.
Greg was a quarterback at the New York Jets. And we cut a deal with him, kind of like these NIL deals. But Greg was a professional NIL at that point. And he was on our show as a regular guest. I don't know what – I don't even remember the sponsor. Do you?
I do.
Is it the same one that...
It is.
If you need a crane, call CraneWorks.
There you go. He's dialed in. I'm telling you.
Paul, can I just tell you how dialed in Greg McElroy is to terrestrial radio already? Coach Saban comes up. Obviously, Wednesday was his day. He walks straight over. Thank you, Josh Maxson. And Coach Saban comes over to our desk. He sits down with us. Greg introduces him on the show. He said, Coach, thank you so much for being with us, and appreciate you rolling up right there in your beautiful Mercedes. Thanks for coming out and talking to us. And I was like, he gets it. There it is. He understands exactly how things need to operate.
Well, I tell you what, next time I talk to him, I'm going to introduce him and say, I've never had a Ferrari.
I'm sure you could probably get your hands on one, though.
Yeah, I mean, I might be able to borrow. I might be able to lease a Mercedes for a month, but the Ferrari, I'm not in contention. So let's talk about the events of this week.
Yeah.
And obviously the story yesterday continues to resonate. What are you hearing? Because you're from Texas.
I am.
You know how these cats roll out there.
Correct. Based on what I've heard and the people I've talked to is that it's something that's being heavily discussed in both Texas and Oklahoma's camp. Now, whether or not the interest is mutual, I think that there's nobody in the SEC's camp that's willing to go down that path right now. But I do think that Texas and Oklahoma are fed up with the current situation, and they are willing to explore other avenues and other opportunities. So that's basically what I've taken from it. I've learned nothing, essentially, from the SEC side, which is probably a positive, frankly. But I do think that this is something that obviously has kind of blown up our week and something that neither one of us could have foreseen coming as of about 24, maybe 26 hours ago, just yesterday.
I think you do have to look at the semantics, Paul, and have the understanding of when this first came out, it was that those two schools had sought out if there was going to be any interest. And then past that, kind of the road that Greg is going down of, well, what else could have been accomplished with this easily? Number one, you set the standard of we are not happy where we are. And then maybe even you open it up to other entities of guess what? We might be available. So I would be a little bit wary of what actually might be taking place and maybe some of the other messaging that was going on subliminally behind the scenes.
Let's say it happens.
Yeah.
What does it mean? I mean, what's it going to be like with those two in this league?
Well, I grew up with Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, I credit that game, that rivalry, the Red River Shootout, Red River Rivalry, whatever we call it now. I credit that game for my love for college football. I went with my dad every single year to the Cotton Bowl, and that was my indoctrination to the sport that we now cover and love. So I have always felt a certain level of appreciation for those two programs because I've always felt as though when I was 10 years old, I wouldn't be the college football diehard that I am if it weren't for those two programs. I, for one, already think that the SEC is the strongest college football conference in America. I don't think that necessarily needs to be discussed. I'm not sure it's really all that close, to be honest with you, when you look at the depth and quality and the brands that are already occupying this footprint. But I think when you get the opportunity to add two brands like that and you look at the bigger picture, say you want to rank the top 15 brands in college football, 1 through 15, if those two programs become a part of the SEC has no worse than the top 7 brands in college football. And that's pretty remarkable when you really think about it. So I think that the SEC is in a position of great strength. They don't need Texas and Oklahoma. But if Texas and Oklahoma were to show some level of interest, then it would be worth listening to because I think they could strengthen the brands and strengthen the power of the conference and the depth of the conference.
Let's be real, Paul. There are not many teams around the nation that if you took the top third of the SEC annually and you added another team to that, it would actually raise the bar of the level of play. I think right now with what Oklahoma is, there's the potential that they could do that. We've seen Texas be that before. They're not that right now. And I agree with Greg. Not a need to have, definitely a nice to have. First thing that came to my mind would be inventory. You mentioned some of the rivalries that would immediately be there. Some of the other rivalries that you could potentially revisit. We know what those are. Whether one side wants them or not, you essentially would be able to have that to offer. So there's a lot of it to be excited about. There's a lot of it that maybe could be dangerous for the long-term future of college football, college athletics. Don't know all the answers to those things, but it's definitely fun to talk about.
I do think this, though, Paul. If Texas and Oklahoma were to find their way into the SEC, and I don't know what the time frame, I don't know the logistics, I'm not really sure I know if this is a reasonable story, but I do know that if they did, it would be over in regards to college football. Over. Now, you could tell me, well, the ACC is excellent. They have some brand names as well. Okay, yeah. Clemson, Miami, Florida State, all excellent programs, all have great history. That's all they got. All right, North Carolina's good, Virginia Tech's good. I get all that. Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Wisconsin to a certain extent. Do you want to include Nebraska in the Big Ten? Maybe. West Coast, you're looking at Pac-12, Oregon, USC at best. I mean, it is over as far as you can't even make a clear argument for anybody else as far as the strength of the actual league.
Floyd Mayweather doesn't have a counterpunch for that. if it were to take place.
Yeah, but let me go deeper, because you know we're now at the end of this thing, and we've heard countless coaches talk about, you know, we're close, we're this, so we got to recruit better. What happens after the middle, though, Cole, of the SEC, when you add these two to everyone who's obviously in there? I mean, the teams that are struggling, I mean, where are they going?
I think all of those teams, Paul, first off, never discount the ego of a college football coach. Never discount the confidence of a college football coach, because the ones that we would right now label in the middle or towards the bottom of this league, every single one of them believes that they have a plan, they have a path, they have things in place that will get them either to the middle or towards the top of this league. And some of those teams that we're talking about in very recent memory have been very close. You talk about a team like Ole Miss, a lot of people probably categorize them in the middle. They had two wins over Alabama in recent memory. It's actually happened. Arkansas is a team not too long ago that was ranked in the top three in the country. So some of those teams that are there, I mean, Dan Mullen had Mississippi State
number one
in the college football playoff ranking. So, Paul, I believe all those coaches really do think that their way will work, or else they're not taking these jobs. I heard you ask Brian Harsin earlier on your show. You had it made at Boise. You're winning games. You're recruiting well. You love where you live. It's a great setup. Why come here? It's the SEC. It's Auburn. It's the brand, not just the team brand, but the conference brand that you're affiliated with. And I think everybody knows it, what comes with that. And I think if you looked at it all from a big picture standpoint, you'd probably say, well, if that did happen, what else could it put in front of us at our individual facility with our team and our franchise that would allow us to continue to try to build and be on par with some of those other teams?
Yeah, I think that the middle of the league, the bottom of the league, there's mobility within this league, and all it takes right now is an incredible coach, a commitment from the administration, which every program that has gone up there, all 14, every single administration has gone out and said, hey, we are investing in football. We're going to put money into the facilities. We're going to put money into the student athlete experience. We know that it costs money to be good, and we're going to go make it happen, because it does seem to me as though every school, and you can tell me, well, they focus more on basketball. Really? Have you seen what Kentucky's done from a basketball standpoint and a football standpoint? They've committed to their resources. They put resources into the program. All these programs, there's upward mobility now, and it's been evidenced. Kentucky's a great example of a team that was really kind of way down the pecking order that has now risen to the point where they are annually competitive in the SEC East. I think the same can be said for a lot of different programs. There's movement up and down. Now, one has been pretty clear for quite a while now with what Alabama's done, but there's a lot of upward mobility. I think with the right coach and the right system and the right players, you could potentially win this league if things break your way.
Sometimes not just resources, patience. And that's where Kentucky comes in, because year after year two, after year three, Paul, there were a lot of folks that were saying, get Coach Stoops out of here. They showed patience. They waited. He developed it. He built it. And now he's done things with Kentucky football that had never been done before.
Thank you so much, guys. Cole Kubelik and Greg McElroy, we'll keep listening and watching. Great to see you guys. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll hopefully get a little guidance from probably one of the few people here who know what's going on. The commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey, joins us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We welcome you back. We're delighted to welcome the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference on the final day of this SEC Media Days. Commissioner, last summer we had many weighty conversations. More recently we have, but today the entire sports world is buzzing over the report yesterday that broke about this time concerning Oklahoma and Texas. I don't want to act naive and say I haven't seen your comments, but I think it's only fair to ask you to comment and explain anything that you can in terms of guidance on where we are on this story and where does it go.
My big news yesterday was a text message from my wife that our water had been cut off. So while the world revolves around whatever sports issues.
So your water at your house?
Yeah, my water at my home. Yeah, so we had a little bit of a billing delivery problem. Apparently, you don't get the bill, you won't pay the bill. So
you've moved.
We've got it all corrected.
Okay, so you had real problems.
So I had real issues. I've been consistent and clear. I haven't commented on a story from anonymous sources, and I'm respectful of others. And certainly will be. And that's just reality. I know people want all kinds of information and people speculate, but it's obviously a time of transformation in college athletics. Speaking big picture, leaving a newspaper story aside, transformational time is an understatement. And as we walk through legislative issues, name, image, and likeness, still COVID, there's enough keeping my attention focused on those issues, I can assure you.
This is such a humongous story, and there's a lot of statements being issued and uttered. Is there a roadmap to when there may be some clarity or comment from your office?
Not really, no. No, I think I've been consistent for 24 hours and probably be consistent for a while.
As they say in the courtroom, asked and answered.
Yeah. Awkward pause, right? I learned a long time ago. You remember John Solomon when he was with the AL.com.
Right.
He was the king of the awkward pauses, so silence is fine.
No, and it's understandable, and I know a lot of people out there are rooting for me to ask the same question 4,000 different ways, but I know you very well, and the answer is going to remain the same, so we'll move on.
Yes, let's do that.
We are 22 days into NIL. You keep up with the news, and there's a lot of explosive headlines, a lot of stories. Where are we in your mind on that?
Well, we're where we thought we'd be, which is like I'm giving you the cliche answers. But let's just talk through reality, right? So there's the word confusion, the phrase wild, wild west have been used I don't know how many times this week. Nobody knows what's going on. No, let's actually bring a focus to it. State laws in the SEC footprint are in place in 10 of our states. One state, Commonwealth of Kentucky, has an executive order. When in the past people called and asked, well, what's the rule? We'd call the NCAA or look at the NCAA manual and provide an answer. Now the answer is, what does your state law say? What does your state law permit or prohibit? What can you do under that state law? What can they do? That illustrates part of the problem. Is there's no consistency among those state laws. I would say there's probably 80% are similar, but there's always variances. And across the country, where there aren't state laws, those institutions can make decisions because we had an intersection of state laws, litigation, an outcome of a Supreme Court case that said the NCAA cannot overregulate these issues. That's our reality, and so we're following state law. It makes the case for a uniform national standard that's well considered, and Congress has the opportunity to do so. Congress has the ability to spend, in fact, the responsibility for millions, billions, trillions of dollars right now. So a lot going on there. I'm fully respectful of that. But the unique nature of college sports, I think, demands some attention so that a high school recruit doesn't have to think about 10 different state laws or 11 different state laws, can understand that there's uniform national standard for their college activity, particularly around name, image, and likeness.
Talking to Commissioner Sankey here on the final day of SEC Media Day, so many other things I'd like to get at least an update on. We talked to you a few weeks ago about the CFP expansion, which have played a critical and integral role. Is there any any more news on that front?
Well, I think so. So from my perspective, there is. We're in that kind of local information gathering and have spent time with our presidents, head football coaches, ADs. Hey, here's what it looks like. Here's why. What are your questions? What are the issues you see? We're about to do that with student athletes this evening, our football student athlete leadership council, and later this month with faculty representative. That's our current responsibility. Remember, we're leading into a late September gathering to see where we are. What does it mean for transition either in the current remaining five years or out five more seasons? And we all had some assigned responsibilities. The CFP staff has some assigned responsibilities. You know, there were some articles about this bowl's position or that bowl's position. I think those are likely premature. I haven't even had that kind of report. I've seen the articles. And, you know, talking through the issues about the number of games, the placement of games, how does this affect our program, how does this affect our conference, that's really our focus right now. And, you know, we've had questions, Paul, so I'll be more specific. Hey, why are we giving automatic bids? Why don't we just have, you know, blank number of best teams? We have four best teams now. So within our conference, I've been asked that question. That's one. Two, you can, in one unique circumstance, run up to as many as 17 games. Play 12 games, a conference championship game, lose, play the first round, and then win all the way to the championship game. That's the 17-game scenario. Is that a stopping point? You know, if you were five net last year, you know, ranked fifth, you'd take that opportunity. If you take Texas A&M, they would have played 12, would have played early, and they would have had, three going in. So they would have had 15. So there's this variance where you look, and part of our responsibility with 12 is how can you balance the number of games? And so we're hearing that feedback. And then where do you place games? Can it actually work? So I had one of my staff develop a calendar, and all of that gets to be a little bit boring, but how it fits, end of season, where can you play games, when does the spring semester start? Those are kind of the mechanical issues that, again, we said, rather than go out and investigate and have 50,000 leaks, which we've seen how that plays out sometimes, let's just say, here it is. Go ahead and know what we're doing and why, and we'll do the work to figure out if it can if it's possible and if it's something that's supported widely.
Well, I'd like to close the week with you on the subject that you began it with, and that was in your opening statements. Your COVID comments made so much news around the country. It's interesting, the NFL today mirrored a lot of your comments. But sitting here all week watching, and I know you've been doing much else, doing many interviews, but a couple of coaches, I think two in particular, did not really address the issue. They were evasive on whether they have been vaccinated or whether they would encourage their teams to be vaccinated, and said it was a personal and private issue. That's great, good for them. But that's not exactly what you were suggesting the other day. You're warning or saying there's going to be forfeiture. So all this is known to you. But how do you feel about what you have heard all week?
Yeah. So to be transparent, I'm fully vaccinated, and as soon as I could have, I had access and March and April, I took that opportunity, and I've sat with doctors, I've listened to the science, and you know, I want to do the best I can to remain healthy. And we have states that have said the requirement can't be established. I mean, that's just what I'm dealing with. I don't have the ability to say, hey, name, image, and likeness state laws are great, but these whole state laws and executive orders in place around COVID, I'm just going to tell people you ignore. That's not reality, right? And so you go to what leverage do you have? What realities have to be presented to say, here are the problems that can come from that decision-making? And, Paul, that's what you heard from me on Monday. I started with that position being communicated in late April in an athletics director's meeting. I shared it shortly thereafter with head coaches, and people do have the ability to make the choice, but those choices do have implications. And if your team can stay healthy, there's two ways to avoid contact tracing. Everybody stays healthy, nobody gets COVID, which means hyper attention to COVID protocols. It's possible, but you can increase the likelihood of not having that type of COVID-related disruption through use of the vaccines. Nothing's perfect, but the science indicates that that's one way to reduce the spread and to avoid contact tracing under policy issues.
Finally, on that issue, beyond the SEC, beyond coaches, question that sounds like something we asked you repeatedly last year, but this, you know, all you have to do is look up and down the news dial, and I know you are in constant contact with the leading experts in the country, but it just seems like there is a much higher level of concern today than we have had really since last year. To ask if you're concerned would be a ridiculous statement. I know you are, but yeah. The level of concern about where we are going from here.
I read a New York Times article while I was on a separate video conference, just looking at, you know, 87%, I think, in that article of those hospitalized have not been vaccinated. So I can reduce my chances of being hospitalized by accessing the vaccine. Again, nothing's perfect. I read a story here locally from a doctor saying people are sick, like deathly sick with COVID, asking then for the vaccine. It's too late. And the doctor referenced that her one patient with the vaccine will have some oxygen and be released. I've heard that from three different doctors in three different regions. So this is not the effort to like create a story and say, wow, look at what's happening and manipulate it. This is what's happening. And there's an opportunity to address and reduce what's happening, but we have to get busy now. So remember last year we talked, I remember vividly, I laughed and you said, wow, I've never heard him like that, just because my level of optimism had dropped. I'm not there, but I knew then we had to address the issues as soon as possible. The good news is, you know, you have these 3 and 4 week upticks, and then hopefully it goes downward. But you have to do something about COVID to make that happen, and that's be attentive to hygiene. We're in a fully open society, and we all have to be careful.
Commissioner, thank you. I look forward to the next conversation.
Yeah,
and many more after that concerning some of these issues. We appreciate your time.
No, it's always good to talk, even when I don't talk much, Paul.
you do it well. The Commissioner of the Southeastern Conference here with us, and we are going to take a break on the final day of Media Days.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
He's Pat Forty's son. And Mitchell Forty. Does that name sound familiar? He took this picture and one of the last men standing. So we'll give you an update on that at the top of the hour. The last hour is pretty much all last media members standing. There are six left, which is interesting. One comment about what the commissioner said in relation to COVID. His office is in Birmingham, Alabama. He lives in Birmingham. He mentioned recently moving with the water issue. Just came out, I'm just reading this, that Alabama is the only state in the nation with less than 40% of eligible population vaccinated. And if you detected some frustration there, yes. We have two coaches, Brian Harsin and Mike Leach, declined to comment on whether or not they have been vaccinated. You can debate whether that's a legitimate question, except the commissioner made it a big issue on Monday. Let's continue with more phone calls. We'll get Raymond in North Carolina. You're on the air. Hey, Raymond.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I am well. Thank you very much.
I'm first-time caller, long-time listener.
Wonderful.
Paul, I got something I want to run by you. Don't laugh. Just hear me out. First of all, this Texas-Oklahoma thing. I had a dream about that a few months ago. Now, let me say this. I listened to your callers talk about this acquisition is going to change the framework of college football. Well, if you think about it, the SEC has changed the framework of college football several times. Number one with being the conference championship. I believe, you correct me if I'm wrong, the SEC was the first conference to have a media day. Am I right or wrong on that?
You are right, Raymond. They were the first to start this, and they're pretty much the first to start everything. I appreciate your call. I didn't mean to be so short, but we are bumping into the end of the hour. We'll talk again. Final hour is ahead, and we'll look behind us and see who's standing.